appointment to attend to at 10:50. So before we do the formal introductions, nothing personal, the members are known to the officials that will go through that process afterwards. I'm going to give Minister an opportunity to address us. Thereafter you will leave, and then that it should be Mr. Paulson will then address the House. And then we will provide an idea to process all. And it is first the Minister will be back in an hour's time. So whatever questions we suppose to the Minister can then be accommodated at a later stage. So that's something we will do afterwards. But without much further ado, I want to hand over to the Minister, Dr. Alcum, the Minister, and the official, to be. And I don't want to waste much time because we have a very personal engagement. I'm going to hand over to Stacey to provide us an opening remark, and then thereafter we'll speak to the Minister and we'll proceed with that to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for allowing me to attend the meeting with Coffee Protected. It was seen on short notice. She wants to see myself in the Denmark and St. Cruz on the Anton for the problem. So I will be back. So thank you to the committee for allowing me to meet with Coffee Protected. Chairperson, from where I'm sitting, this annual report contains the achievements against our targets set in the annual performance for the plan for 2018-19. Financial year. I'm extremely proud to be part of this team. Some of the issues that I can flag, the long drought that we struggled with, was really difficult to get through it. Very low rainfall patterns during 2015, 16, 17 years. We've learned valuable lessons and our system was tested, and I think we can hold our heads high. We've accomplished a lot, some best practices, I think, and a lot of people come to learn from that. Saying that, we need to realize that certain parts of our province, especially the central Karoo part, also the Thomas part, the Smith's part of the law, it's also dry, and we really worry about how we're going to deal with the drought in those areas. But the Karoo is unique because one of the pillars of a water plan we can implement there, like desalination for instance, that's far from the sea. But we're busy with geohydrologists to look at the underground water systems and how to get to a new minefield, because also doesn't help we drill in the same veins because then we can just shift the problem from one area to another. But both of West based in Canada started during this period, and we supported them, and from there we designed the joint regional approach, and I think that also helped us a lot. Something going forward for this committee, I think more and more we can learn how we can join forces and work better together, and especially in areas like the Peru. So I think the department has done incredible work, and going forward we will talk to you more and more on the joint planning district initiative. that was designed by this department and actually now endorsed by the president all over the country. So our role in supporting and monitoring of municipalities, we put the youth effort in that, and I think over the years we've built systems, and if you look at independent studies like Africa Ratings and the IQ, under the first 20 municipalities in the country, 12 is from the Western Cape, and the other one 8 to 10 is out of the Western Cape. So our municipalities, a lot of our municipalities are doing quite well. We understand that we need to do more, and we also understand that we operate in these difficult circumstances. Shifting the blaming is not going to help anybody, but we need to flag that we are under severe budget constraints. I think the news from the Budget Council will reach us, but if it's stays on 5, 6, 7% cuts, it's 30 billion rand over 3 years. It's going to take its toll on service delivery at the end of the day, because the coal face of service delivery is local government. That's why our council was struggling, was they in the need of services and bed projects, etc. And we need to do everything possible to support and to back our municipality. Part of my engagement now with the financial sector, because I look at the letter, and it's also governance and ethics. And we've just come out of a session where we joined partners with the Hans Seidel Foundation and Stellenbosch University, where we talk to ethics within our council and our councillors. But Jefferson, allow me to thank the committee with respect to oversight role, and therefore I will be back for any questions. My team and the most senior team is Greg Wetzel, so if there's any political question, I'm going to ask you to deal with that. First of all, they're all time back. Otherwise, you can hold it back and we will deal with that. But we've got the whole team here to field the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. As I was saying earlier, you are cute and we will be able to arrange at the ceremony part of the goodness. Thank you. also will be commenced with the Tidatu Mahu.
Morning, Dan Goldsmith.
Morning, I'm Peter Steiner-Wiesner, member of the committee.
My name is Dan Beckner.
Good morning, Dan Mitchell, and Chair, I may read an apology for unborn sake.
Thank you, honourable members. So we will move on to Mr. Paulson, if you would like to testify.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members. I just say that there's a number of officials here this morning. It's also part of the learning and the exposure, understanding how the committee exercise oversight of the work that they are doing, but also just some recognition and acknowledgement of the work that the officials are doing. So that's the first thing, honourable Chairperson. The second thing is that at the moment there is some protest action in our board. The balance of the staff is very notes about the refugees, and they're actually for the entire board. So we need to use emergency exit contingencies. There is a contingent of board enforcement, but they have not served a incident yesterday on the protesters. And so the public work is in POPs. To actually enforce that. So, in the event that stuff will happen, I would be some of the starters to go exercise some of the second arrangements on that side so you can allow us to address our appreciate that, Chairperson. Just briefly, from where I'm sitting, and I think the entire department is the environment of the local government is becoming increasing beyond the year. It does become difficult. And we are familiar with some of the difficulty in lying in terms of our response to deal with some of the local government challenges environment. So this on the national level, what we've done is we've established what we call a core where we have all the provincial and nine provincial heads of departments responsible for local government level. Currently, the Western Cape, I chair that session, has been established with in the Western Cape. What we then get together and deal with some of the challenges in relation to local government is share best practices and we try how to assist each other in terms of the difficulties that we experience in local government. And from where I'm sitting, I can tell you that the difficulties are not particular. One problem in the entire country that is extremely difficult around the local government in the country. So, for instance, there's also drought in Eastern Cape as well as the Northern Cape, and we've written to those provinces and said, we've gone through a drought. It's a real drought, and now for our schools and experience, and to help us. The Eastern Cape province has responded, and we will in due course dispatch. Number of officials to go and assist and help with the assessment there. In addition, Chairperson, what has been difficult that we've been often approached, and the Minister made reference to it, what we call the justice model, is where we begin to align the plan, talk about co-planning, co-budgeting, and co-implementation. We have found that consistently on here, the challenges emerging from local government are the same, and how do you respond to this? Fundamentally, is we want to deal with the implementation while the planning has not been addressed. So we pushed it back to the planning aspects of it, and for the first time, this province is now aligning the planning priorities of the province together with municipalities, and being enforced by co-budgeting and then co-implementation. You will also see that those innovation comes through what we call the provincial strategic plan, but I suggested yesterday it should be called the Western Cape strategic plan because it includes all. Provincial and local government, but also the entire number of stakeholders in that regard. A further difficulty that has been found with our work, Chairperson, is actually in validation of the legislation and the reforms in relation to the Systems Act. We know that the national, that the constitutional court has ruled that if indicating of the amendments to this, in fact, were actually in unlawful. Even the change was the kids of all the policies that they had in Parliament past 1975. And what has happened is the court ruled that the National Department will have in 4 months, in other words, they suspended the invalidation of it, still applies. And that was set to expire on the 9th of March 2019. However, our National College, and that's why we established the forum to assist the National College, failed to actually remove the amendments, tagging it on the 76th, with the result that all those amendments in relation to the Systems Act and to the extent that it affects the regulations became null and void when we had it. And it left a huge gap in terms of the application of law, given the fact that we've also implemented that it actually brought about the governance practices in this, particularly in relation to the appointments of municipal managers, of senior officials, and the performance reviews and management of senior managers in the municipalities. And we had to go where the senior council opinions just on the application, particularly the upper limits as well. But this province together with one of the other provinces asked the senior national department to deal with this. We understand it has been tabled in Parliament at the 76th day in February, given the national provincial elections that has not been kept in abeyance. But in September, the Parliament has begun with a participation process, and it now needs to go to Parliament for the legal to make it again once more. So that has actually compounded about the difficulty in local government. It has sort of affected the slightly and what we have achieved in local government. And in addition, Chair, might add the back to basics program that we've done. There were 10 municipalities in issue. 4 municipalities, given the areas that we've worked on, have now sort of exited that program or in the process of exiting. And we'll see those municipalities that were part of the exited also have not been ordered in that regard. Minister has spoken about the relationship with town title. And I do not wish to go into it, but we are now focusing on the ethics and the value systems of councillors in the city. We have done all the governance stuff and so on. And although there was traction, there were not traction in terms of traction in terms of our view. So we said, what are the problems? It's fundamentally how councillors make decisions in council, and how they participate in council, which we need to deal with afterwards and try to correct it and deal with it. So that in itself sort of just put us on a side road. And we need to deal with that and see that they actually connected in terms of order. So for that reason, we are focusing on the value system and the ethics of councillors, besides doing their roles and responsibilities and actually training them in that regard. Spoken about the citizen interface, Craig and his team have done work around integrated community development plan. It's where we actually train public participation officials in municipalities so that we can strengthen the interface between municipalities and also the citizens, board committees, and ensure that they actually understand that on a particular level to further strengthen and enhance what we call public participation. Obviously, the Tucson program, ONA has done over the last while under review, they focus particularly on outreaches in farms. Because obviously, taking government services to farms, as well as the Tucson program and the CDW worker program, they've done extensive work reaching those farms in the period under review. In conclusion, Chairperson, in terms of the fires and disaster management, you know, there were extensive fires under the period under review again in Arlington, in Bartlett's area. We also had fires in Bedford Bay that lasted for about 20 days, but the drop house in Bedford. And around December 2018, we also had fires in Upperdale, where 53 homes were destroyed, people were displaced. With our own ability, we managed to restore the service in that community within a week. and about a month ago, 1.5 months ago, the temporary housing were handed over to those citizens. And it was fundamentally the Moravian Church in front of the Sister Lord was not our responsibility. Thank you, Jesus.
Thank you, Paulsa. I'm going to give you a minute to reflect on thoughts, and then I will recognize the members to pose questions on the basis of the content of the last after the church meeting. Thereafter, not going to be strict in terms of time, but I'd like to urge you to be as brief as possible with your questions and have long, extensive introductory remarks before you pose your questions. So, the way I've posed the work is that you'll pose a question or two, whichever number you may have, and then it will allow each of you to respond to your question immediately. And the answer we will go to the next member. So I recognize Honorable Smith, Honorable Bethmerson, Honorable Mitchell, and the Honorable Arad. Honorable Smith, you can have the floor.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for the brief overview in terms of the department. The school economic growth will continue for the time. Can you possibly explain what is meant by the continued for the time? And then in paragraph 4, at the provincial level, the department is key stakeholders. And in the co-planning, co-implementation of support and help. Two questions. What lessons are we referring to? And what support is provided to municipalities in the place for them? Then I want to put the paragraph 6, where we sentence number 4, the effectiveness of the priesthood in regulating the elective procedures of appointment of senior managers in municipality. Can the accounting officer please give a brief explanation of this order and how it impacts on the department? Lastly, Chair. I'm quicker than you, Chair.
Thank you.
Jefferson, thank you very much. About cuts we actually got from 2016 to 2017. And on this aspect, in terms of the regional budget, and those are given the budget cuts established over the bar and the pressure that the provincial territory. Jefferson, on an annual basis, what we do, what we call a letter and appeal to provincial economic, we do an update and in depth detail to the economy in the country. And based on that, we are required with a certain budget cuts on a year-on-year basis. We just made it 2 weeks ago, and I was speaking to people about this in terms of right in the Congress. We were asked to cut their budgets over the NTF by 5, 6, and 7%. We've illustrated the huge implication that it had for this department. Although it is 40 million, it implies that we need to terminate certain programs and projects. It implies that we can't support the municipalities in the way that we want to. And it implies that in the after years, we most probably have to terminate some programs and projects in this department. To the extent, in my view, we must consider to close certain directors and some directors in this department. If you know what has been shared at the Budget Council and the Budget Forum over last week. The budget cuts are severe, the chairperson. So, on an annual basis, they have cut the budgets of all the provincial departments. And we have asked to save expenditure amounts. And in the 2016-17, the total was about 9.3% of the amount that's the original budget. And I'm just looking at the 17, the 18-19. Then the CFO said it went up a bit, and then the 18-19 you also see that total was about minus 22.2% total. And that's together with earmarked funding, as well as the provincial export sales, a portion of the budget that we are giving. So it just shows, Jefferson, on an annual basis we are required to cut the budget, and we need to find innovative ways to ensure that we still deliver on our mandates. Besides that, if I come to the staff establishment, this organization is about only 75% of its staff budget funded. So we're working with a 3/4 of our staff that we should have. The rest of these positions in the organization are funded. And that's actually critical balance to the work that the department is doing. In terms of the key stakeholders, what we have established it is the municipalities per se, including the districts and the local municipalities. It is mainly some of the national departments, like the government, water and sanitation, rural development, and that. And then it's all the provincial departments in the province, and certain stakeholders outside of the provincial government. So what we've learned, Chairperson, is that given our IGR engagements with municipalities, we managed to establish good relationships with these sectors. Extremely good, because if you are looking at IGR calendar, we have various meetings with municipalities, with the national departments, with certain stakeholders. But that, in essence, did not give us what we were looking for in terms of co-planning, co-budgeting, and co-implementation. So we say that we are aligning our planning priorities, but we get into a room and we say that the provincial government has planned this way and the national government has planned that way, and obviously the provincial government has planned this way. And then all that we do is we just begin to share the information. But my view was that we need to get in the room at the stage of planning and say, how do we plan together? And we've done that now for this round, for this PSP. So the national government got 7 priorities, the provincial government's got 5 priorities, and the local government's got 5 priorities. How do we align it to make it one thing so that that's contained in the provincial strategic plan, that's contained in the high degrees of municipality, also aligned with the national, so that we focus on the same priorities in this province and in all the municipalities also. So those are the lessons that we have learned. In terms of the appointment of senior managers, the amendments in terms of the systems that have been added and the subsequent regulations and that is about the recruitment and selection process amongst others for senior managers. So, for instance, for the appointment of senior managers, whether that's a senior manager or a municipal manager, there is strict criteria. And we have actually developed a best practice note, and we've issued that to municipalities. We have various invitations to municipalities to say, if you wish to appoint a municipal manager, this is a process in terms of law. Notwithstanding that chairperson, some municipalities did get it wrong, are not complying with the legislation. And in those cases, we've asked them to correct it. Certain municipalities have done so. Others did not choose to do so. So what we've done is then we advise the minister to go to court and to set that appointment aside to a court order. We have established very good governance practices in terms of the appointment of senior managers in the municipalities in this province, and we are maintaining those. And you can see in the province, Chairperson, municipalities, given the practice that has been established, they are now voluntary complying with those government facts and having instituted. There is a wonderful attempt by the Pakistan government, but we encourage municipalities, given the government facts, to have the status to follow the peace cry regulations.
Thank you. Also, Mr. Kamara, question? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Fawcett. Chair, I must also say to you that it's given me great pleasure to read through your annual report and to see that you have achieved, by and large, all your targets that you've set for yourself. And that is fantastic. Also, on the report that was done, the outcome, which will be discussed this afternoon with you, all of us can only endorse and be very happy with what we have been able to see there. I do, however, have a number of questions, not so much of what is in your report, in some cases I will link on to making the report, but also things which are really not quite important, but that I do not see in the report. The first one, if I may, just quickly point you to page 30. It seems to me as if you involve yourself quite a lot in the position of CEW, Mr.
Yes, Section B, you have the deck on the floor.
Sorry, I thought they and we can continue.
And then we just saw the very specific regard to the opening remarks of the issue.
Thank you for that, Chair. Then I have a couple of questions.
Thank you. Other questions?
Previous premier had viewed that the review of even with the Hansard one. in tools in the form of municipal managers, and we identify the teams, which are middle-level managers in the municipality. And then actually we combine, we allocate the entity to the mentor.
Okay, I just interrupt you, I just want to add, I've got to be here earlier, response. I think we got a number of new members. Maybe briefly just the description of the foundation and where they are.
It's outside of the institute in Germany, and they are fundamentally focused on governance in municipalities. So given the emphasis on governance in municipalities, the exact relationship they have been established in the fact that our arrival is governed by municipalities. So it stems from there. They're not the local foundation in Germany, Jefferson. Sorry for that. So we've identified just in the mentoring and coaching and that's a problem, and I know that some of the officials that were mentees were then subsequently promoted into senior management positions in municipalities, and that's work that's done with our own title. Last year we had what we call the winter school training program. We can generally give the names of the municipalities that participated in that mentoring and coaching program. So 204 councillors last year participated in what we call the winter school training program. We've just, and the minister has spoken about it, underway is now what we call the summer school. And the focus is actually on the ethics and the value systems of council. And that is currently underway. And we're also providing the people. But last year it was the winter school that we called, and we also focus fundamentally on the ethics. What we call councillors. There's a governance project, and we've done work around the Lomar Institute at the University of Western Cape, and it is about the research on a new governance system for local government in the province and the composition of the governance work that we're doing. In addition, this year, Chairperson, we are also doing what we call a council development curriculum. When we, right at the beginning of 2016, when we started with the new term, it was our view that we needed to develop a curriculum for councillors so that councillors can actually acquire over time an accredited academic qualification. But it also helped them in training. Maybe to do it next term and for maybe a council to become then the speaker or the mayor or the deputy mayor and so on. So we've met with some academic institutions to share our views around it and so on, also about prior recognition of prior learning. And we've now embarked on a program together with Hansard Institute to develop a curriculum for academic qualification for councillors. And I think that's going to help us a lot, particularly in local government, so that councillors can also progress. And on these initiatives, Chairperson, is a co-funding between ourselves and the Hansard Institute. So we will contribute partly, and they will actually co-fund also some of the initiatives. I've made reference, Chairperson, to the Winter School. That is underway, and it's an initiative between ourselves and Hansard. And also supported by the University of what we call Bosch University. And there's work that we're doing with the Hansard Institute around anti-corruption for administration in municipalities. And you can see that it is currently concerned, and we have developed the processes to deal with it. Just in terms of public participation, it's further detailed, Chairperson, if you with your accreditations, you can provide it detailed later in the document. But it's just a hard understanding. There's various methodologies that we need to strengthen. And Craig will speak about it. It's the value of working with the trainer. And also this process that we're doing to strengthen through the training the public participation officials. But we were the first to admit, Chairperson, there's lots of work that needs to be done, particularly around public participation, strengthening the work committees, then in the functionality of the working with this, but also doing work as to how Mrs. Pellegrin's provides feedback in the working with this and it's absolutely recommended. I think what we have done thus far, the Honourable Chairperson, I mean, the member spoke about the Speaker's office. Between herself and the Minister, we now want to fund, not fund, but advance a view that the initial manager must become responsible for the Speaker and the work that the Speaker needs to do, including public participation and so on. So that the relationship is rather established between the initial manager, the Speaker, and subsequently the board members and so on. Because we see where it's now positioned currently, it's there are challenges for us. But we will provide a detail later on in the third part. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Thank you, Chair. The reason why I'm asking is that which I feel very passionate about and I want to go back to public participation. What is the department doing to ensure that public participation happens? When I ask that, or when I say that, the Municipal Structures Act, it says that a councillor needs to have X number of report back meetings and their hands. What's currently happening is that there's blockages in various political offices based on financial, and I'm not going to call it any question on that, but what does the department do to enforce that to in fact take place? Because if there's no money for a meeting to take place, the law is being broken and the community suffers. So at what point do you guys intervene to make sure that that's thank you.
in addition to the ICGT that we rolled out for 23 municipalities, 27 officials, because of the same one, we repeated it in the current financial year. We've also been so far to assist municipalities because it's expected of them to have public participation policies or community policies. Now the municipalities, the officials, they have been asked, but they don't have to develop a policy. And for that reason, our department has also this year rolled out a policy analysis, implementation and development course. And we've done repeating it again later on this year. So those are the initiatives that we are trying, and we are getting there. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Other than the further questions? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. And again, good morning to everyone. Chair, also let me welcome the overview of the county office. The targets, as we said, Chief. Also the audit of the department. Chair, but I also think it's important to note, even with the audit outcome of the Department of Government, it's important to note that 12 of the 23 municipalities have received clean audits last year, have received clean audits this year. I'm not sure that it reflects on the department itself, whilst we are doing good job at this level, down there we have only received 12 clean audits. And I'm not so sure it really boils down to the capacity of the crop of councils that we currently have, or what it is, but also you must appreciate the attempts. Because in the last meeting that the officials told us that despite the hard work that they are giving and the assistance that they are giving to the different councils, the luck stops with them. They decide whether they want to implement the assistance, training, whether to participate meaningfully and to take the right decisions. It's up to them. And it then comes back to the issue of enforcement. How do we make sure that we enforce to strengthen the capacity at a council level? And how do we make sure that councillors take the right decision and participate meaningfully? Okay. And the question that my colleague asked in terms of how many councillors. We have received now the amount of councils that participated in 234. But is it 234 out of 3 councils, 4 councils, 5 councils? It's important to know that we have those numbers. We know now it's 234, but we're not sure how many councils have participated, whether it contributes to the failure of receiving clean audits when they don't participate or attend this particular training chair. The issue of public participation, what we're experiencing now, Chair, in Wurttemberg, I believe it is because I think it's a front runner for the budget, Chair, where communities are supposed to get the opportunity to draw up a wish list to say what we want in the budget. Is that IDP meeting is happening 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which is a problem. I mean, if you then have those type of meetings in the afternoon 3 o'clock, then obviously you don't want people to participate in that particular process. And I think the problem should play a role in making sure that there's meaningful participation. And I'm glad hearing from the accounting officer saying that they also want to take public participation now to pass. It will be a difficult process getting access, but we will get there. And all of us must give our support for that. Second, Chair, the issue of page 12, not page 13. Page 13, just to check. It's page 14. first deliverance to support the understanding, says, listen to the last part. Furthermore, the understanding opposes in this relative isolation, earmark funds are created in both of this, in this relative divorce style. I just want to check how much was understanding on this and what kind of reasons for the intervention. Thanks.
Thank you, Noran.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to ask the audience to respond to the public discussion, but didn't allow me to respond to the balance. I'm talking to Mr. Hattie, the discussion around quite a lot of that. It is our concern, and that's why we're trying to do stuff to improve the quality of counselors. If we have a better counselor, there will be a better form of council decision, and then the place will be governed in our new property. In 2011, we had a couple of regional councillors. I think in 2016, illustrated some challenges, and that's why early in 2016 we said that we must begin again. And we've given various accredited training ourselves on side of Nelson Mandela University, Bosch University. So we put a lot of effort in, but we still see on a regular basis that councils are taking decisions which is outside the parameters of the user. And I can actually speak further about the real challenges in that in relation to our difficulty to get councillors to make the right decisions. And I mean, there was various examples in the recent past around getting councillors take decisions which is unlawful, and then myself and the minister and the department acquired to intervene to say that this is what the law requires, so this is what your bylaw will say. And so it asks you to comply, and in the event that you don't, this is what you will do. So it is a difficult process. We have trained councillors how to exercise oversight over a budget of 500 million. Say, the 500 million budget of a municipality is not your money. It's the citizens' money, it's the taxpayers' money. You are charged with the responsibility to spend this money to the benefit of the citizens and so on. So, and that's the kind of culture that we wish to install in councils, and that's why we've actually done the work around the curriculum. We really want to strengthen the quality of councils that's coming through. We are also, I think it's a bit forward, we're also thinking about putting a document together for political parties and say, given our own experience in the province, and what we see and what we observe, if you go through a process of election and so on, we ask perhaps to consider X, Y, and Z, these characteristics, these qualities, this and that, so that it helps us at the end to get a better councillor in a municipal council, and actually lessen our burden to deal with the subsequent fallout in terms of inappropriate council decisions. In terms of the audit outcomes, there has been the honourable member remarked correctly. We've done assessment on that to say where there was deterioration. What we found is, and we've said so previously in the House Chairperson, it was fundamentally around the supply chain reforms that caused irregular, unauthorized, and disinvestment expenditure. It was around the reforms in terms of in scope. Although there were one or two pilots in this province, municipalities struggled to implement in scope. It came at huge budget, and they struggled to. And currently in the province, it's not a single financial system. Each municipality has a system connected with collaborative and so on. So we had discussions with the provincial church to ask how do we standardize the system. And we were engaged already with the service providers of SAP. But SAP is in the city of Cape Town and it comes. Council in Lusbos. There were further discussions how can other municipalities in the province actually connect or tie in with the city of Cape Town, and that they can actually use the system on an agreement basis, and that actually pay the city of Cape Town so they don't have to purchase the system and so on. So those are all things around it. But a fundamental reasons for the integration was around the reforms, particularly around the supply chain, the EMSCO reforms, and then subsequent other financial reforms. We are trying our little best to ensure that there is not a deterioration of poor outcomes fundamentally, and we're individual together in terms of the governance aspects. We monitor the councils quite carefully, and if there's any concern about a decision that's been taken, not in terms of law, we don't know about it, and respond to it almost immediately. And the chairperson that is actually taking a stance where there is a director responsible for municipal governance in the department, as well as specialized support, and we on a daily basis need to navigate away as to some of the decisions made by councils. That it doesn't have detrimental impact on the audit outcomes or otherwise on the citizens of that particular municipality. I have heard what the honourable member said about the IOP. It is that time. But in terms of our new approach, in terms of the JA or the district model, we've now established the interface teams, and we want the provincial and national officials also to attend their public participation in these meetings with municipalities, because our assessment is that 70% of the challenges raised by communities is about housing and human settlements. But then you have the community speaking about human settlements or housing, but they don't have the provincial official in the room responsible for human settlements housing. I will take up the matter about 2 o'clock meeting with David Nash, the municipal manager responsible in Luxembourg. I was not aware of that chairperson. And we have the detail around the outreaches that we've done thus far under the period under review in Palms. And I want to ask Monet to speak to that at a later stage when we do the detail. And can I just ask Marius just to speak about the both of this, the understanding of this in terms of the outreach.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Member. Because a minimal amount of public freak bound, and it was on leak detection and water meter replacement. Unnecessary, it was not actually on the expenditure. The chance is
Honourable. Thank you, Mr. Branch. Can I ask Honourable Moran if he has a follow-up question, and
I'm glad that there is some
actions that will be taken together. The issue of the performances of municipalities, and you will agree with me, some of we need to stop the bleeding. If you look at the last three financial years and downwards by the spiral, how many years sleeping between 15, 16, 16, 17, and now 17, 18, it's all the way down. And somewhere we need to stop the bleeding, because if councillors at that level take all decisions which impact on the outcome of that municipality or the outcome, then it means people on the ground are suffering. They might not get the next service that has been expected from the municipality. So somewhere we need to stop the bleeding. But I'm glad to hear from your side the interventions that will be there to make sure that we strengthen the capacity of councillors, both in decision making and participation, how they should take decisions. I'm glad to hear from that. And maybe next year we will see that they have stopped the bleeding and there's an upward trend from curve upwards. Because, again, I'm going to say it reflects maybe on the province, department, local government, whatever your outcome is, might be clear. But if municipalities, whether there's a downward spiral, it will reflect that on the local government department at the next point.
Thanks, Kevin. Apart from the understanding, I think Honorable Chow also same direction, which to pose a question with regards to drive and road trains, is that true? And I'll allow you to ask a question that you can comprehensively respond to the concerns of the drive response.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief. Chief, I just want to understand that so there was an underspend by the state, okay? And so 43,000 men was in fact 40 liters and not the drug. So I just want to understand, so the department said 43,000 men to go to Western Stability, or did go to Western Stability period that after doing water leak investigation, because I know that the municipality did do that. Was that a saving on that number? I don't understand.
Thank you, Honourable Mitchell.
We gave the municipality 1.75 million. For leak detection and water meter replacement. Our approach to the drought is two-pronged. We look at bringing down demand on the one side, and then on the other side we are augmenting, giving municipalities additional water. So for Bradford West, we've got a big drive on bringing down their water losses, and then on the other side we've got a big drive to look for new well fields, for wells. This amount was specifically for water demand management, bringing down water losses. And the project value was initially estimated at 1.75 million, and the municipality only spent 1.697 million.
And so there's various initiatives, a combination of both augmentation and
of the honourable members' question around the enforcement. We are required in terms of 1.4 to actually just to support municipalities both with the national government and in both their capacity and support it. In terms of certain pieces of legislation we actually can enforce, like in ASMA, so we provide the say for instance a standard bylaw. And that only becomes legislation in a municipality or a council that drops that bylaw as law in terms of that. So you can't enforce it, but you persuade and you ask nicely, and you jump up and down. But fundamentally, it's the certain case, it's the decision of the council to adopt. Also, we would like to intervene much quicker. We will see that the functionalities of municipalities are affected. But the legislation currently, in terms of the constitution and the related legislation, does not allow us to do such a procedure.
Thank you, also. I think that concludes this section, because we've gone about 5 minutes of the disallocated time. So, colleagues, and members of the public and those not present, we will proceed with Part B. Part B is the performance information. Starting on page 24.
Okay, just on the procedure. The NDC is not here. I just want to understand the legal position. If there's some questions about the NDC, please. Also miss. Okay. So you don't allow us to do that yet?
Yes. Of course, we should be the NDC is here to be more like discussion. Quick start with starting at page 24, so 71, we will stick ourselves to the particular section before we now allow members to pose the various questions. I would like to just give a brief moment to each of you if any particular aspect or elements of Part 3 would like to highlight, or whether you know we should just move right to the question of from the members with regard to content of Part 3 position and order.
Jefferson, Jefferson, with your academic, I suggest that we proceed with the questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Porter. I recognize Honourable van der Westhuizen, Honourable Smith, Honourable Terry, welcome, Honourable Miranda Arthur. So, Honourable van der Westhuizen, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, if I can refer to those present to page 37 of the annual report. My suspicions are of clarity. Particularly regarding the last three columns there. The middle column says current actual standard of service, then the desired standard of service, and then the actual achievement. Now, I'm not sure what is the difference between actual achievement and actual standard of service. And perhaps you can refer to those first two lines on page 27. In the second line, it says that actual standard of service was 43 initiatives to improve access to government services. The standard, which I presume is your target, that you've set is 15 such initiatives. But then the actual achievement is also 15 initiatives were held in the province. Now, how can we have, in the same line, government services were held in the province and government services were held in the province, and the one is 43 and the one is 50, if you could just clarify. In the line just above that, you say 1.2 million citizens accessing government services, that was your target. But my impression is that some citizens will access your services more than once. So would it then be correct to show 1.2 million citizens accessing government services? Then, Chair, if I can ask you to move on to page 30, and that's where my question is now. About the CDWs, I happen to be a local government representative when the CDW program was introduced initially. And to this very day, I couldn't find one single job description for CDW. My impression was that you would get on a class. Now they had to arrange an Indizu, and then they had to help with this, and then all over the show. Whereas, quite frankly, I believe one thing that I would like them to do is community information regarding, for example, the importance to look after our public assets. You know, to get communities not to burn down their libraries and so on. I believe there's a very strong need for communities to start discussing, you know, how we should respond to infrastructure and vandalism and things like that. So if you could just perhaps help me with that one, please. Then also, in terms of page 40, and you also now in the earlier response responded to the quarterly reports by municipalities. Now, I appreciate the fact that you need to know what's happening in the province and what's happening at local government level. And I think you are actually stating in your annual report that you are trying to make simplify the process of reporting. Because I have heard that particularly some of our smaller municipalities really struggle, and the amount of time and energy that is put into reporting. Now, we all know a baby will not gain more weight the more often you weigh the baby. You must feed the baby to gain the weight. But we are weighing our municipalities, and I'm concerned that that is actually working eventually against the development. So if you could perhaps just help us to say, what are you doing to ease that burden of reporting on the municipalities? Then also, Chief, if I can now refer you to page 64. What we see there on page 64, in terms of the number of municipalities, is that money that was transferred to municipalities, it seems to me, that money was not spent, or there was some underspending, in some cases severe underspending of that money. Now I do know that your financial year and that of the municipalities don't coincide, but as I will just show, I'm also wondering to what extent you transfer when you know that the municipality is able to spend that money, or is it a way of making your books look good by just quickly transferring money to municipalities knowing well that they can't spend that money? And I've now referred you to page 64, then to page 66, and page 67, the picture looks even worse. Some of which I think are some of our top performing municipalities not being able to spend that money. Yet you are quite often stating there as a matter of fact that the money will be spent by the end of June 2019, obviously the end of the municipalities financial year. And also, if I can refer members now also to the transfer of money. There are a number of instances where in the last column you say that the money was transferred in the last quarter of the department's financial year. And my for example page 67 and some of the others that I've referred to, it's almost like a cut and paste exercise, Council of Patrons and Respect during the last quarter of the 2018-19 financial year. Council of Patrons and Respect during the last quarter of the financial year. Students, help us understand why do you transfer the money right at the very end of the financial year when I would presume an earlier transfer would perhaps have made it easier for to spend that money in this year. Then also check in terms of the support to councillors and the training that you refer to the earlier response, particularly the training in terms of ethics, etc. How do you determine the actual training needs of councillors? You know, we attract councillors from a wide variety of backgrounds. We have councillors who are practicing lawyers, and we have councillors who have actually school training. And yet now we design and restrict all councillors to come in a thing, etc. How do you provide for that wide variety of training needs? And I want to say, it seems to me, in my interaction with councillors, quite often their biggest problem is not ethics and so on, but just how to deal with the public. How do you deal with somebody coming knocking on your door and saying, I want 20 rand for electricity, when you yourself, you know, as a councillor already, you know, must provide for these people, are expecting of the councillor to pay for contribute to funeral costs. And then lastly, Chair, second last, at one stage within the province, there was an official which wanted to phone up for legal advice. You know, just quick legal advice, and somebody pointing you to certain paragraphs in the legislation on local government, etc. And I know of many councillors who carried this person's cell phone number on their mobile phones and made use of it. And, you know, I'm not sure if the municipality is now on the right track with this or that. Okay, there's a point, give me a few pointers in terms of law. Yet there's no mention, as far as I can see, in your annual report of that very important support service that was available. Is that still your intention? Are you still giving that kind of advice? And who should we refer councillors to for that kind of support? And then, just the last one, which you will know that quite often I'm looking for things in annual reports and I don't find it there. What is your position, for example, on the established document of municipal courts, support to municipalities for that, to ensure better law enforcement? Also one of the important aspects of local government. They make laws and they must enforce those laws. And then lastly, I know in some municipalities they have been talked of an ombudsman, and I quite often feel that some of our citizens or residents in a municipality are quite vulnerable because the municipality has got all the legal and financial backing. And when your house, for example, has got a problem with the municipal sewage line being blocked and your house gets flooded and so on, and you believe that the municipality is not acting in your best interest, where do you go to, apart from then court action, which many of our citizens has gone before? And then just the last word, Chair, I think it plays so well in this department. I just saw the CFO on their knees in front of the director. And that is something unique. I've never seen that before. Thank you. Perhaps that is your voice.
Thank you, Honourable. Thank you for your attention. You capture the sense that you may respond.
facility in our department, and that recruitment inspection process, chairperson, is underway. Municipal courts, municipalities normally can carry with us, they've got bylaws. Obviously, they can't enforce the bylaws, so they don't have a court. Or in the area, there's not a court that's adequately capacitated to deal with some of the enforcement matters and so on. So they come to us and they said, but we now want to establish a municipal court to deal with some of the offences in relation to their bylaws. So then we engage the Department of Justice, because fundamentally it is the function of the National Department of Justice. And we speak to the National DG, not the National DG, I don't want to play on Friday. And then engage with him for the possibility around establishing a municipal court. Generally, they're not inclined to establish courts, given the fact that it's either a regional court or some other court within that. And the idea is that it's not a preference to establish a municipal court, cannot then improve the capacity of the existing courts to deal with some of the, the offences in terms of the municipal bylaws and so on. But it's something that we continuously work and in the province. Certain other secondary municipalities. In other words, your bigger municipalities have actually municipal courts established in certain areas. But the smaller municipalities also insist to establish municipal courts. This in relation to the ombudsman, there's in relation to the order of general municipalities have also called us to say that we also want the ombudsman. In the event that we have efforts to the order of general to elevate that's apart from the service delivery issues. There's a recruitment currently, but what we do, chairperson, is when there is, and this is what we kept busy with all the time, at least get on a daily basis, 2 to 3 complaints from communities where municipalities are not meeting or responding adequately to the concerns of citizens. And then we respond between myself, department, and the MEC, we respond to it. If necessary, I go visit the site visit. If necessary, we send the engineers to go look if it's an infrastructure problem, is it around service delivery, is it about sewage or water, and so on. And in that way, chairperson will resolve it, but that's in the absence of the ombudsman. Can I ask Ms. Zucker to go first on some of the questions that Albert to go first is on the explanation of that one? Okay. On the explanation, and we'll ask Ms. Zucker to get on the balance of the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The question on page 27 is a service delivery improvement plan that integrates one every department to identify 2 services where they will actually do improvement on. It's basically the franchise that they bring in. And the template is basically provided by them in terms of what we are putting there. In terms of the actual standard of service, what you do is you look at the previous financial year, what you achieved. So that's basically your baseline. And the desired standard of service is basically your target for that particular financial year. And the actual achievement is basically speaks to what you reported at the end of that particular financial year. That's around those particular services. Hence, you see the first, for instance, where you see the 43 initiatives to improve access to services, and then you see 15 electronic plans for the 2018-19 financial year, and we've achieved those initiatives. And what we've done actually is that the previous financial year, while we actually had 43 and now 15, we did not categorize them in the previous financial year. And based on some assessment, we then discovered that it would be nice for us to begin to categorize them and begin to say that these initiatives will fall under this particular category. And that the detail of that as well will follow in the course of some.
Chair, the question around citizen better services. Initially, we measured the number of citizens.
subsequently you mentioned that it's indeed because of the very same comment. The same people who may access the number of services and hence to move from measuring the number of citizens to the services act. On the community development red card program, the program itself, the description for the community development red card. Notwithstanding the fact that when at the time the program itself was conceptualized, it was indicated that this particular partner serving would be working across all social spheres. But when the program, in the case of the Western Cape, we have a job description for the same time. And they are just like any other official participant in this room, where they sign an annual a performance agreement, and on a biannual basis, they are measured like any other. Now, as in the beginning of the program, the legislation around what is the objective of the program and what are the functions of the program was not very clear. But subsequently, it's been clarified. So the latest clarification is on the Public Service Regulation 2016, which is very clear in terms of what are the objectives of the program and what are the functions that the program should perform. Now, in the Western Cape, even before the Public Service Regulation, the programming, we were working towards that. So the number now, our indicators have changed. Initially, in the past 5 years, we were measuring something similar to what the honorable member is indicating. So for instance, we had a number of information sessions that the government conducted, and those information sessions would vary from all components. It could be around what are the opportunities that people can access. It could be around any of the issues that come through to the national departments that have come through, or state or the departments that are doing various services. So we've since moved in terms of our indicators now in the program. We've consolidated our indicators in line also, which is also speaking to what is in the public service regulation. So we've got two indicators for the program, where we have grouped all the work that we are doing. Previously, we measured partnerships, we measured community services, community projects supported, information sessions, and case referrals, repairs, and subsequently we've grouped our indicators into two components. The one is around all our initiatives and support actions, in terms of people accessing government services. And that would vary from people applying for all kinds of documentation that's required around grants and all those kinds of services. And then the second component to all the support that we do for the various government initiatives, TUSOM program and other national or provincial programs, including conducting community awareness on the issues. Then the second one is around our support speaking to socio-economic opportunities. And the reason we had that kind of indicator, we looked at what are the current challenges that we are having in the various areas. And subsequently, we put that support initiatives around food security, we do support cooperatives around enterprise development, working with the community and the other departments. So any of those initiatives are covered. So in essence, that work is being done, and when we and the issues relating to we work with the colleagues on the ward committee. So when we identify something that's key and it needs to be addressed, issues around drugs. So we take note of what the honourable member has indicated around the need to educate people on public goods. So it is part of the other issues that we need to consider as we see the challenges.
The department in the declaration of the
systems are basically integrated into the Western Cape Monitoring Evaluation System, which is a single automated system, which is sort of a one-stop shop for reporting the grants. So all municipalities as well as departments basically integrate into the system. The department then uses this information to develop municipal performance reports, which then basically interfaces with our and guides our municipal support initiatives. So we've developed this one-stop sort of hub for reporting in the municipalities as well as departments, because we are aware of the deep that municipalities are experiencing. Thanks,
Chair.
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you,
Chair.
In terms of the council needs, we must also understand that it's a philosophy to also determine the needs of the municipal elected as well as appointed officials. So they've got specifically skilled development facilitators in-house to do that, because they need to get a workplace skills plan to be able to access funding from the local government TISA. But we, as a province, we have to support them in terms of that. So that which they're not able to do, we try and develop programs to augment what they're already doing in the municipal space. And we do that in consultation with the South African Local Government Association as well as the LGCTA. Obviously, when you develop a program, it's also important to know exactly what it is that you want in the program. So it is specific to what municipalities are not able to do that we come in terms of our support. Also, internally, we work with the University of various universities in the province, as well as the Maasai Foundation. But almost all the units that are sitting in front of you actually provide support in terms of municipalities' ad hoc requests to the department, which is to try and assist with any training needs that we are made aware of. Thank you.
Thank you. I will deal with the question around the transfers that we make to municipalities. Just explain the process that we follow, because then I think it will become clear and where we are at. So what happens on an annual basis, the department receives grant funding from the provincial division, and that is for specific purposes that we utilize that. So the first one will be in terms of governance by project in municipalities. The second one will be for citizen-centric type projects, which is specifically designed to strengthen communities in municipalities. And then the third one is specifically for infrastructure type projects. So what the department then does is, through our intergovernmental relations processes that we have in municipalities, and also looking at the IEPs, we attend these sessions called Simon, and mid-year reviews to get an understanding about what are the needs and the priorities that municipalities need to assist us with. So all the project managers across the department then come back and say, these are my needs. So what we've done inside the department then is to design a very strict due diligence process to take in all the needs and requirements that can come through the process through an external process where we put a number of checks and balances. So honourable members, in front of you are quite a number of the committee members. The committee is made up of members across the three chief directors. The CFO and the team is also part and parcel. And then what we do is we have developed criteria for each one of these areas. So for the governance project, there are criteria that projects need to adhere to, of which honourable members, the previous spending patterns of a municipality and one of the countries. The second also goes for the citizen-centric, the same criteria, and then the last one is for the infrastructure. And also more recently, we added as a sub-commission, we added some of the grant money that is going to be funded to engineers. So then we follow this process on the members, and then some projects we don't consider to support these projects. Soon as the process is complete, then the committee, which myself chairs, we go and present this to our head of department, and then from there we make a final decision about which of the projects that can be supported. Remember when we started getting those needs and requirements from municipalities to start off with, we also like to indicate that some of the information that we collect from municipalities is in gap. And then we have to wait for the adjustment process, the budget adjustment process with our CFO, and as soon as that is done, the amounts are actually published and then transferred to the newspaper. So it is not fiscal dumping, we just have, it's a cycle issue. So we're actually waiting just for the adjustment budget, and then the money flows as quickly as it has been published back into the last year. So how the timing works out, honourable members, is that the money flows normally December, January, February, as soon as it's published, and then municipalities get financial year in June. But also now, this report only reflects up to March. So the spending that the members are seeing on the pages here is only reflecting up to March. So in preparing for us to come and present today, we actually, we have all the updated as at the end of June. So other members, so much we can make that available to you, it looks totally different as members can imagine, because now municipalities have all started working on the project and the expenditure figure looks that quickly different. So this is the end result of an internal process that we follow to make sure that the municipalities that really need the money in. Over and above that, I think I just need to mention that with every municipality that receives an amount, there is a very strict what we call a transfer payment agreement entered into between the health department and the municipal manager. And there is a very detailed business plan attached with very specific what they are. And inside the department, there are project managers that actually take responsibility to carry those projects. So, actually, I don't know if you want to.
I'm not sure if this is to add to this, the allocations are made over a 3-year cycle, which implies that the money is not spent in the first year, municipalities can apply for all of it, and based on stringent criteria compliance, we can decide whether we roll over the fund for the next year and then after years. So that's why the allocation is made over 3 years.
Thank you, Julie. From the business community, any other questions back to us?
Thank you, Jim. If I may start with the last bit. If you could just explain to me, why must we wait for the adjustment budget in terms of the allocation of those projects, taking into account that it's often multi-year projects in this year, and then still, why can't they be transferred in the last quarter? It just seems to me I think more money can be transferred a little bit earlier. And I do also know that our local governments struggle often to spend their capital budgets. And you've not used the word fiscal dumping, thank you. But that is what's happening. And it's something that we've always tried to steer away from. And it seems to me that the system is aggravating this problem. Then please, on page 27, would you just help me with the headings of those three columns? The actual standard of service and actual achievement. It seems to me you're referring to a previous year and a current year, but in both it will say, current year, or, actual achievement. I think I still need a little bit more clarity from you and just for people who have that understanding. Then my last question, Chair, is one of your items that you budget for has to do with disasters, fires, and so on. And my question is, how do you budget for disasters? How do you budget for fires? Because I do know that in the past year, in some years, we've had massive expenditures in this regard, and yet. My impression is that in terms of the PFMA, over expenditure is seen as a hearing or as a taboo. And can you assure us that when a helicopter is needed, there won't be a CFO saying, sorry, we've run out of money for the helicopter, those houses must now burn?
I'll ask this, why not just to prepare a follow-up question for important, I think it is.
It's not that I think that's just for counting. There's two processes within the year. During the course of the year, we go into what we call IGR engagements. And together with municipalities, whether they have the LGMT engagements, whether they have the IT engagements, or to find out whether some of the emerging challenges and concerns for the municipalities. What we are doing now, we're trying to do the allocations in the main budget. In other words, when the budget is tabled somewhere in March, and the financial year starts the 1st of April, that we can transfer the money. So it implies, Honourable Chairperson, that we need to do the work much earlier, and we've done that this year to influence the excess budget. We can actually publish the allocations to municipalities in the main budget, which allows them more time to spend the money from the 1st of July 2020. And that is what we are doing. However, during the course of the year, we get very many requests over and above our assessments that we've done. The municipality said, can you help us with our wastewater treatment works, can you help us with this and that? But then we've gone through the process already. We will then negotiate with the provincial authority either for additional funding or otherwise use some of the savings that have emerged within the department to see how we can redirect the municipality. And then that is another development process that we follow, and only in the balance of that year can we then answer. But I assure you it's not personal knowledge. It is a record within the department that actually records each and every decision and process and application and business plan to be adapted to the municipality. We are aware, and that's why for the following year we are now intending to publish the allocations to municipalities within the budget.
The
actual relate to the previous financial year, which is the middle column. Okay. There is four columns. There's 1, 2, 3, where it says actual current standard of service. And then there's one that says desired standard of service, there's one that says actual achievement, which is after. Now, the actual current is the relief. If you look at our report, it's the year 2018-19. Then in that case, it will relate to the year 2017-18. That is what we've achieved in the previous financial year. And then the last column will then say, what have we achieved in
2018. Thank you, Mr. Greenberg. I'll move on now to Honourable Smith. To some things for the economic method, to solve the program. And secondly, do we have a report of how many jobs are created, what kind of jobs, and how much was generated in the economic development project? That's the first question. Then on page 35, the employment is identified by the program. What are the reasons for the vacancies? And how many of these vacancies, unfilled vacancies, are currently in force? Page 35 still. In the department, you have an update on the review process in terms of the organizational structure. Then we have page 59. Is the department satisfied with the level of governance in the municipality? Like the George or Lisa?
Your
George and Lisa? Where
What kind of intervention has the department made in the business development? I heard the accountant officer earlier mentioned that they would want to intervene much quicker.
But in the sort of good
intergovernmental relations, intergovernmental relations. There is no question about that. The end of page 41. Comments on the mediation, one program performance, and the other. Can you get it? Can you get it? Clarity on the constitutional inability in terms of what you are referring to.
Sure.
Then I'm at page 61. Number of municipalities supported on the fire brigade. How much funding is given to the municipalities for fire brigade? And what is being done to the various complaints of firefighters around working conditions in the underground? The Department of Works. Then I also have a question on sealed up municipalities in terms of transport payment. I just need to understand. Is there any particular reason for the low expenditure of sealing of municipalities? Were the funds fully spent? Is there any particular reason for the low expenditure? And were the funds fully spent? For sealing of in particular. Then this is the last comment check. I'm worried that since the counterpart of the prison is now outside, the issue of work committees in municipalities, I'm worried that the election of a work committee happens to a community process in the public. But you often find that work councillors at the major state just decided to fire certain people for working on the community. Now, is that allowable, or should it go back to the community and then the community recall such a person from a particular sector or from the community itself? And in many instances, your work councils, your speaker, when these things fall under in the municipality or the public participation itself. So I'm just raising it. I don't know if this is specific intervention from the province side to protect the work committees in terms of politic
Thank you, Honorable Smith. What's your name?
Chairperson, I'm Oscar Mazuka and in the to respond to some of the questions and perhaps to get out of the audience. And then it's to our head. Mazuka.
What we've been seeing is that even with these
services being available, and we are not filling the site for many households. The public is polarizing under unemployment. So we've been reconceptualizing the whole strategic direction of the project, hoping that it will become more impactful, having more economic spin-offs beyond government services. One of the interventions was to begin to support small-scale economic projects which is linked to the Tucson Center, meaning it's either happening at the center or it's in a sense driven by the municipality through the Tucson Center manager, in some instances like in George, even by the LED even. So now we're coming to the actual six projects with that in mind. And we can provide you the full report on each of these. I'm going to give you a brief summary of interest of time. So the one project was an overstressed municipality, and there we have 20 people using abalone shells to make a beautiful design product that we sell. So, and they harvest these shells from the abalone farm. And the beneficiaries come from Austin, Mount Pleasant, and Olivia. Beautiful project, welcome to the city. Pepper Colors, it was youth, and there it was an art project. So we had 10 youth trained how to do mosaic work with the money, and they were trained by a local mosaic artist, and they actually had their practical applied the art form to beautify the actual Tucson scene. And some of them are now, we are trying to link them to other building projects where this skill can be utilized. So it's not used in the art world. The third project was in George. This is a cooperative SUNY small business. And this is to support a very small business to grow, to increase the number of participants and beneficiaries. The exact number I can't provide you right now, but I will do so. And this is led by the county unit in the George municipality, but actually to some center. The fourth one is Issaquah. It was a youth skill development project for 10 young people in the tourism industry. And two legs to it, it was basic training in the hospitality industry. The second leg that we're completing now soon is where they will be placed in various guest houses, in various roles. Hopefully for permanent employment. Fifth, Lanesburg Municipality. It's an existing project run by the NGO Access Center. It's a wholesale manufacturing. Retail, trade manufacturing, various wholesale products. And the last one, neighbor, is the Musselman Municipality. It's a swimming, leading, and also a wholesale project. It's for unemployed people, and to really, this project was aimed at number one, transfer institute, but also assisting them to smart small businesses, even if it's micro, to start making and selling. So that was the six projects specifically referred to in the annual report for 2019 year. Thank you, Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Torres.
Some expenditure. See the work.
Honourable Chair, I'm referring to your question, page 65, my colleague. See the work, 110, and 51. That's my submission, which I'm responding to your very page 64, my colleague. What we do with our Tucson centers is we have a very small grant to assist them to do minor maintenance work. This is now replacing of windows, door handles, etc. Usually focused on occupational health and safety issues. Our government department that occupies these spaces is protected by law. We can't have staff feeling unsafe, etc. And we transfer this amount usually based on a little project plan that sets up little money. As supply chain processes within municipalities sometimes it lags, sometimes things go smoothly, sometimes it doesn't. So what happens in this regard is that by the time when we at our end of our financial year, of the 100% is only spent 51. But usually we were convinced by that time that they would be able, based on their plan, to spend the whole amount, which was a big amount. There was an amount left by June, which they applied for a rollover for, but about 8,000 rand. So between what you've seen there, the 51, and by the end of their financial year, they've got about 102,000 of that personal maintenance. And we recommend it because it was already committed funding. So in terms of the treasury guidelines, they did apply for and that rollover of 8,390 was. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, just in terms of the supporting integrations from the fire services side, it's a couple of areas. The first area is for the wildfires. So the district municipalities and the city are responsible in terms of the law for managing wildland fires or crop and forest fires as they're more commonly known. What we do is we support them through a national contract with the organization working on fire. We go into an agreement every year with them, and they then supply us with helicopters, fixed-wing bombers, which is a fixed-wing aircraft. There's a picture of it on the spot of Section C. It's a larger aircraft. And then we also have what we call spotters, which are command and control aircraft. So what we do at the beginning of the year is we do an assessment of where our high-risk areas are. Once we've done that assessment, we then contract the amount of aircraft that we require for that period. Those aircraft then come down, so they're not here the whole year, and the reason being that it's quite costly, firstly, and secondly, that the fire season, the dry season up north, is different to ours. So they will work up in the Pumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal, and Popo area during our winter, and then they come down only at the beginning of December. And we have them until the end of March, and depending on the season, sometimes extended until April. So we pay a cost already to have them here. What we then do is, if a fire does break out, the most critical time to deal with the wildfire is actually in the first hour. So we as a province carry the cost for the first hour of the response. That's very important because municipalities, although they budget for wildfires, they're very reluctant to respond with the aircraft because of the cost. So then the problem is that they delay that response, and by the time that the actual aircraft are called for, then the fire actually costs so much more. So we implemented this first hour response about 8 years ago, and we've actually reached a success, although we have a lot of large fires, so 95% of the fires that we actually respond to, we control within the first hour. We also contract specialized fire teams, and what that is, you know, you have your firefighters on the ground dealing with the fire, but you sometimes need to fly people up into the mountain, you sometimes need to get in the dark, etc. And you have to place them in by helicopter. So these are highly specialized people, we train them, they must be able to work at high altitude in the mountains, and there's all kinds of complications around that. So we've learned quite a lot around high altitude teams protecting areas where your normal fire teams can't really get to. So the expenditure just around that is every 2 weeks we meet during the fire season, and we track it very, very carefully. Because we know how, you know, just to give an example, the cost of our smallest helicopter is 45,000 rand an hour. The cost of a fixed wing bomber is about 70,000 rand an hour. So you really have to be very careful, especially, you know, in a fast moving incident, your costs can escalate quite quickly. So what we do is we track every 2 weeks, and we have got to seasons where we've seen the cost, you know, that we've had a very busy year. Then we have gone back to our fronting officer and requested that through Treasury that we receive additional funding if it's required. We've never been in a situation that we've not responded. We've at all times, if we've had incidents, we've responded. Just to give an example, the fires we had in Iceland in 2017 was outside of our fire season. So we actually had to get those resources from the north, and we had to arrange for emergency funding for that. We also make use of the Air Force, but the Air Force do not have the resources anymore that we used to. We have to also remember that we have much more fire. 17,000 fires. So those are all kinds, not just wildfires. But around the 17,000, around 9,000 of them are actually Dublin Forest fires. So we have a very high volume that we have to deal with. What we do further in support of fire services is we did a survey around the capability of fire services from a equipment and vehicles perspective, and we also did a survey around the capability, the capacity of training. And from that, we have implemented a program where we actually procure with the municipality fire engines as well as equipment for those vehicles, and then we place them at the municipality. So we recently delivered a vehicle to Stellenbosch, which is the 50th vehicle already that we have provided. So it's not only to empower them, but we have to understand when we have a large fire like we had recently in the one that actually you've mentioned, we actually call all municipalities to come and respond. It's not just, for example, with the Garden Route fire, you know, the Garden Route that responded, services from as far as the West Coast, City of Cape Town, all responded. So it's really we empower them so that they can assist us to as well. As far as the training is concerned, we started training for fire services. Number one is rare, and number two is very expensive. And especially if you have to send people to go and be training over 2 months, it's quite a long period. So what we've done is we did an assessment, and then we have started training the municipal firefighters as well. We did a survey 6 years ago. 17% of the province's fire services firefighters were trained, and now we are around 90%. So we're quite happy with the way that project is going. The complaints that was mentioned of the firefighters, that is in Cape Town, in the city of Cape Town at the moment, and it's a really difficult one. The situation is that firefighters work a shift, and then they work do a standby where they have to go to the station. What they're asking for is to be paid a full, you know, that is to work 8 hours, and to be paid not a standby allowance, but to be paid in full over that period. That would mean that the city of Cape Town would have to double the amount of staff, which has massive financial implications. So there are at the moment a number of, I think they are going to another arbitration by the end of this month to see how they can address that. So you have to really weigh up the issue around the four shift system. At the moment they're on a two shift system. In order for them to work the 45-hour week, they have to go to four shifts, which would mean that, as I mentioned earlier, you have to double your staff complement. And that's really where the concern lies at this stage. And that's where the dispute lies. So it's not an easy one to manage. If you don't double your complement, you have less firefighters, you place your public at greater risk. So we are being informed by them around what's going on, but it's really a big deal to share the most. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Daniel. No, just any other?
Just on the
board committee.
On the board committee, and then I'm going to ask you to speak about the constitutionality of the committee, and then I'll speak to the chairman.
Thank you, Chairman. Also, I want just to update the committee on the process around the feasibility of the application.
Thanks, Chair. Just for you, the question pertains to the deviation that's indicated on page 21. And what we have discussed was the new thing of 89, we wanted to do a handle on the regulations so that we can update and inform the standards about dealing with the process. And then also, pre-case for development is the limited interpretation of the regulations. So the intention was to develop a handle on the regulations and other communities in China, and the process is related to the appointment of senior managers. However, before we publish the constitutional validity to effect on the 9th of March 2019, hence the uncertainty of that unconstitutionality, decided not to vote for, because obviously we wanted our legal senior counsel to give us an opinion on it before we can proceed and proceed to regulations.
Chairperson, can I just respond to the balance of the question? Oh, okay. Just to the committee members.
Thank you, Chair.
code from the basis in terms of the code of conduct, which is usually thought of as the policy. So, that's the answer.
Thank you. Is there any?
Structure Jefferson, just over the last while, their records they have declined specifically. In one stage, it was around about 10.3%, it's now 2.2%. There's no critical posts that are breaking at the moment. Our critical posts is the officials relating to disaster management, engineers, the ICT, management accounting, supply chain, and the town and regional planning. And the balance of that nine posts that are vacant, no posts are in terms of the critical positions of the organization. With regard to the organizational redesign and restructure, we've completed what we call the macro structure. The Department of the Cleanup now commences with the micro structure. And fundamentally, Chairperson, is to bring the organizational structure in line with legal mandate. There has been year on year, there has been scope creeping, additional roles and responsibilities, but the organizational structure has not kept balance or kept with what is happening in terms of the legal mandate of this department. So the idea is of the organization of the presentation on the redesign is to bring the two in line.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Walter. Honorable Smith, do you have a final follow-up question? As you stand between us and Keith.
Chair, just one follow-up. And just back to the fully made investor or Mr. the funding amount in terms of what the problem is giving for funding. The two municipalities for funding.
It's about 7 million and it is to 9 million in 2 years. So it's the amount of funding we get from the provincial prison that's created capacity within in the municipalization to firefighting. And part of it initially we purchased, the first year we purchased the equipment and the vehicles. And in subsequent, the following years we transferred the funding to municipalities, but we assisted with the procurement of those vehicles in relation to some of the things that were established.
That was
our
question.
Okay.
I didn't finish my follow-up,
oh, sorry.
Okay. It was the first part.
Okay.
Okay, I'll be quick. Just on the same question on the fire services. Now, we know that fire services are being rendered by district municipalities, especially in the rural areas. And it's a sort of shared service to your local smaller municipality. Now, the reality is this is a practical service. And meaning there's a fire, the fire must be out. And in most cases, you will find that the fire services gets to the fire when it's completely like out of the fire. You know? That's the reality. Now, because it's a shared service, small municipalities must take what you get from this service. Now, my question is, is there no way that the province can plan, number one, and put measures in place where you ensure that a fire public survey truck, because practice is also working in your local areas, a smaller practice. Now, is there no way that the province can ensure that in a radius of 30 kilometers, that there's an in a municipality or municipal area and so the response time can be much quicker and possibility that
explain how the provision of fire services, the districts are responsible for a certain part of fire services. So the wildfires, chemical fires, and training is the district municipality's responsibility. The local municipality is still responsible for structural fire. So they must have their own services. Now there's a number of, we've been busy with the process to try and streamline it, but unfortunately the two legislations that determine that. And then just as far as providing vehicles, that's what this program aims to do. It's a fairly new program, although we've progressed quite far. But this program aims to do exactly what the member is asking in terms of providing vehicles. So it's an ongoing program. To provide vehicles is quite the vehicles have to be built. It's not an off the floor item. They have to be specified, they have to be built, they have to be provided, people have to be trained on them. So as I say, we've actually in the last, I think it's about 4 years, we've actually procured 50 vehicles already. So it is a process that's going on, and the way that we do it is we look at risk. So we won't buy a large industrial pump, for example, for an area that requires a smaller vehicle. If I can use an example, one of the big challenges we had was the amount of hazardous chemicals vehicles that travel on the M1 and M2. So we procured vehicles that can handle hazardous chemicals fault, and we provided one to Central Karoo Municipality and one to Overberg to be able to deal with those kinds of things. So it's an ongoing process to be able to do this.
Thank you, that concludes the question that was posed by the Minister. Ladies and gentlemen, colleagues, we are going to break up tea. And we return at 22, because we have our script to take several other people to get to see. We return at 22:11, and then we will commence with Honourable Thornton. And then after we've exhausted all the questions with regard to this part of the report, then we will provide an opportunity to post.